Hello and welcome to IPA On Industry Matters, a podcast where we spotlight pressing issues facing advertising today. Hello and welcome to IPA On Industry Matters. Today I'm joined by Polly McMorrow and Clementine Cuthbertson from McCann London to discuss the pressing issue of gender equality in leadership and more widely within advertising. We will discuss how to reflect one's values internally as well as in the work created. So over to you both to just introduce yourselves.
Thank you for having us. I'm Polly, I'm the CEO of McCann London, and I guess ultimately that means I'm responsible for the product and the people that sit and live and breathe within McCann London during their working hours. Obviously I can't consider myself responsible for them.
And thank you for having us. My name is Clem and I'm the comms director at McCann London, and my role is really to manage the external brand reputation of the agency and build the profile of the brilliant talent that we've got in the agency and make a big and solemn dance about all the creative work that we do.
No, it's great. And it's lovely to have you both on here. So I just wanted to ask, Polly, can you talk to us about your culture of fearlessness, which you instill in your agency as CEO?
Yeah, of course. Fearlessness and fearless is such an interesting word because I think, you know, for me, I love this notion. There's a quote by a guy, by John Hegarty, Sir John Hegarty, mm-hmm. actually, which is, don't start a business, create a movement. And I just really subscribe to this notion that you have to act in a way that you want a business to behave. And for me, all my best and bravest decisions have been made in that spirit of fearlessness. And I think whether that was me taking a job, Clem enjoys my hire story, because I think it's a piece of it, which is I essentially said no to the job.
Oh yeah, I read that somewhere.
So they offered me the job, and it wasn't that I didn't want it, and it actually wasn't that I had any sort of complex about thinking I couldn't do it. The piece I wanted was, I'm going to do this a bit differently, and I need for us both to go into that with our eyes open, because I believe that I'm going to do a job in a way that I absolutely stay authentic to myself, but also in a way that is really, really importantly different in the way that I approach our business. So, and you know, it was ultimately incredibly nourishing the minute that actually I was given it, and they said, no, that is the reason that we want you to do the job. So I love this notion that you have to be what you want in a business, and you have to behave in a way that you want the business to behave. And really, I believe that the best and bravest decisions are taken when people feel really, really safe to take mm-hmm. them, because I believe that what we do in the, you know, walls and floors of McCann is to create magic. That's what our industry is about. And I think that people do that when they feel like they can take the risks and you know, make mistakes and do mm-hmm. lots of things that allow them, you know, allow creativity to thrive. So,
no, definitely. And do you know where that sense of like fearlessness came from? As in, was it growing up? Was it when you entered work? Like, where did it actually come from?
It's interesting. I grew up in Devon. My mm-hmm. sort of 30 seconds would be, I grew up in Devon. I went to Glasgow to go to university, where I knew absolutely nobody. And it was like a sort of shortcut in, it's like a shortcut actually in just learning to be funny on tap, because everybody in Glasgow is funny. Yeah. Everybody. And I loved it up there. I met my husband up there. Then we moved to London. But I guess in answer to your question of how much do I think it is, I think that I have always done unexpected things. Mm-hmm. And I think that when I have done the more unexpected things, ultimately they've paid dividends. So I don't think that it was sort of born, you know, I wasn't fearlessly
out the womb.
Exactly, just like
came marching.
Totally. I love the notion that I might have sort of, marched straight out. It's not that, but I do think that through my sort of formative years, mm-hmm. the decisions that I took that were less expected, less predictable, is definitely a thing in my sort of DNA. I talk quite a lot about my dad. My dad is a proud salesman. He's a Mancunian who moved to Devon. Very self-made, very, very hardworking, and believes that you get out what you put in. And so all those things, I guess, are an alchemy of how I turned out.
But
definitely, again, you'll hear it from me time and again. I just believe in finding what it is about, you know, you as an individual. And mm-hmm. for me, that's about taking more unexpected moves and about really starting to learn how you unpack that for other people to be able to take, for them to be able to take their more unexpected moves.
Yeah, that's interesting. And on that point, I my funniest friend is Scottish. Yeah, Daisy, shout out. She's hilarious.
That's so funny. My husband's actually not, and he's Scottish, but everybody else is funny. Legit,
just not the funny gene.
Not him, no.
You can be funny for him.
Yeah.
But no, I was going to say off the back of that, so in McCann London, as you started as CEO, how did you try and kind of instill that fearlessness within the company? Was it like leading by example?
Culture is born of every small moment, not necessarily every grandstand moment. And I really believe those things. One of the things I think that would probably be an example of how that started to live and breathe is actually in pitching. Mm. We pitch a lot as agencies. I love pitching. It's a part of our job that I really love. I love getting under the skin of new clients. I love meeting new clients. I love all of that sort of jazz. But ultimately, only one agency ever gets picked in a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think too often the ultimate success or failure is seen as the decision from a pitch. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just not. For me, it's that you get to see some incredible performances from people in a pitch process. You get to really see people in a different mode, but also see people taking those decisions that have disproportionate impact on the outcome of what we share. So that could be a person that's in on a 3-month internship that is talking about a thing that has just meant something to them on a platform that you've never heard of in a way that you've never done it before. And that can be your absolute primary thing in a pitch. And so I love the pitch process because I think it elicits great performances. And the reason that I think that that was important for me when I came in to this job, or instilling, I guess, that fearlessness, is I just believed in doing it a huge amount.
Mm.
When I first arrived, it was to do with volume, learning who it was and how you make sure that people understand that making mistakes is absolutely part of this, and that not winning is absolutely part of, you know, I really love winning.
Yeah.
But to win, you've got to have lost a whole lot of times and worked out how and why. So my attitude to pitching is the same as my attitude to anything, which is I don't judge, ultimately, I don't judge people's performances on whether or not we win or lose a pitch. I judge it on whether or not I think those people have thrived through the process of the pitch and whether or not they come out of that pitch process a better, stronger, more confident, you know, more illuminated about what they're good at, human within our business.
No, that makes sense. So I wanted to ask you, Clem, how like working here has influenced you. For instance, I want to pick up on how you spoke out against that article on Great Account Men in Campaign by David Trott, which has now been republished as Great Account People.
I think generally Polly's culture of fearlessness hasn't, yes, it has impacted me when it comes to speaking out about various different things externally. But I think the bigger impact that it's had on me is how I show up at work and how I'm able to interact with other people in our team. To Polly's point, I think you've got to be able to do something a lot of times and not be afraid of making mistakes. And I do really believe that working into Polly, I feel very lucky that in my role, I get a lot of time with senior leadership, which I appreciate not everybody across the business gets to do so much. But being able to be inspired by Polly in that space and then almost feel like I can have some, you know, to be empowered to trickle it down across the people that I work with is really the thing that I think impacts me the most. I mean, when it comes to talking about things externally, I think that's part of my character, really. Just what's that phrase? I beg for forgiveness rather than ask for permission,
yeah.
Which I can't say is the most positive thing about me. But I do think that it's important generally, regardless of if it's to the Great Account Men, to a Great Account People, or whatever it might be. You know, change doesn't happen overnight, and if we're all too afraid to speak up about something, then I don't
nothing
think that's very progressive. Exactly. It's not very progressive.
And on that note of kind of change and progressing gender equality, Polly, I wanted to ask you, since joining McCann, how have you prioritized driving gender equality across your agency, and can you talk us through any initiatives?
A bit like I've just said, you know, I believe that change agendas happen, well, firstly, because people want them to, first and foremost. And then I think that it's about a culture which creates the space for change and then sort of supports that change quite consistently. So we've got a blend of things that I'm incredibly proud of, which are we've got Fast Forward Programme, which is about how we really intentionally actually accelerate people from diverse backgrounds through our business. So that's to do with the mentorship programs that we put in place. So again, it's a very intentional way of making mm-hmm. sure that we are supporting creativity through our business, which is important. We have the Ambition Collective, which is about, again, intentionally making sure that particularly females within the creative sector of our business mm. are able to access briefs globally, which is again a brilliant, really, really brilliant. One of our fantastic creative directors here has a huge hand in running that, Ruth. We work really closely with the brilliant Deborah Williams from the Women's Association and the Girls Association. She is fantastic. Like anyone who wants to know or understand how you can properly systemically start to impact women in the creative sector, mm-hmm. definitely understand more about the work that she does. So lots of really important, intentional ways of step changing within a business. But like I say, it's to do with whether or not people want to do it. I feel this really strongly. You know, we've had some huge shifts in our business and particularly to do with gender in our leadership teams. So we are, you know, I think at the moment we're 62% female within our leadership, our exec. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've got women across every single one of our primary disciplines. We have a brilliant head of design who is a woman. We have women across strategy, across operations, across, as I say, design, across creativity, brilliant Reagan Warner. And that's been, I use the word intentional a lot mm-hmm. because I believe and hear a lot people who say that they would like to impact change and 4 years later, there's been no change. Mm. So I think that you have to want to deliver that. And part of hiring brilliant, world-class women who we have running those different teams, and whether that's some of them are new to the business and some of them have been promoted within the business, but more importantly, and forgive my language, but just fucking do it. Like yeah. if you want to do it, just create the space and do it, because that's definitely what we've seen. So yeah, it's important to me, so it's important to the business I run.
Because it's funny, I feel like there's a big difference between saying something and actually doing something, as you've kind of flagged. And it's clear from like your structure, you have such a clear like gender equality across all the different areas of your agency, which I think is amazing. Because I think it's so, yeah, as I said, so easy to kind of say things when you start somewhere, this is going to change. And then actually, you know, people kind of forget, and 3 years down the line, it's suddenly nothing's changed. And it was a bit of a, and I wondered if are you measuring the success of these initiatives through like your creative output or through other ways?
Well, I guess first and foremost, I believe is whether or not those individuals are flourishing, whether mm-hmm. or not they are happy, whether or not they are delivering the best work of their lives, whether they feel like this moment in their career is one which is ultimately nourishing, you know, them as a creative. Mm. This business is just a set of people. You know, this is just a building, otherwise a very nice glassy one.
Yeah. It's nice view.
Lovely, modern, green sort of thing. But it's nothing without them. So ultimately, I hold myself to account as to whether or not we have brilliant people thriving within our business and brilliant women thriving within our business, whatever role they have. Mm-hmm. So that for me is how I hold myself to account. But certainly it's wonderful when you start to see creative work coming out, which you feel has been directly impacted mm-hmm. by their positivity, their perspective on the world, the mm-hmm. way that they have been supported. So absolutely, that's important.
With like female leadership, it's quite a hot topic at the moment of like actually bringing the values that you have and you want as a female leader, because obviously historically it's been men leaders and there's been specific kind of qualities
yeah.
of, you know, strength and aggression and, you know, all these things. And I feel like from what you were saying about the word nourishing really stuck with me, because I've never really heard that from a leader before, like the actual word nourishing, which I love. And I just kind of wonder, how can you help other women feel that they can kind of do that as a leader within their team and not feel bound by societal pressures of what a leader looks like?
I love that question, because I think, and I think it's important to acknowledge, in my career, I've had, as you say, a disproportionate number of male leaders, actually just to do with the numbers of the way that this industry has evolved. But I think it's really important, I do genuinely think it's very important. Some men have more female traits in their leadership styles, mm-hmm. and I really believe that. So I have benefited from some incredible male leaders during my career. But if I look back, they tend to have more, as I say, typically female traits of leadership. They tend to be very generous. They tend to believe in sharing the stage. They believe in that nourishment point, actually, just understanding what makes an individual tick and making sure that you don't just protect that, you allow it to thrive. So I'm incredibly grateful. And, you know, it's interesting when you start to map back some of the sort of family tree heritage. I don't mean literal family tree. I just mean all of us in our careers. You know, you'll tend to find two or three individuals in this industry who probably were responsible for 10 or 11 leaders' impact and development. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that actually they're to do, for me, it's more to do with traits, because you'll find female leaders who have more male traits of leadership, and you'll find male leaders with more female traits of leadership, and you know, all the different types of leader. And that's so important. I just believe that right now, those traits are the ones that are eliciting and giving the platform to top talent. And so that's why I think it's brilliant that, you know, female leadership and female leadership traits are such a hot topic right now. But truthfully, I think that's because the legacy they leave should be the one that we're all held to account on. And I don't say this lightly, if somebody in 15, 20 years time thought about my leadership style the way that I think about some of the people that gave me that platform to shine, I'd be thrilled. And as I say, in my, for me personally, they happen to have been men. They were just men who happened to have very generous, very very modern styles of leadership. So yeah, it's an interesting conversation. That's why I love that you brought it to the table, because I think in a time when I very clearly really believe in brilliant female leaders, that's not in any way at the expense of recognizing that I have benefited from some incredible male leaders, and there are some brilliant world-class men out there who are huge allies of women and who have always been giving us the platform. And I love that those are the people that are coming to the fore as some of the biggest leaders that we've got right now.
There was an interesting point that one of my friends said to me recently, which was, when you are a male creative, for example, you are just seen as a creative. Whereas when you're a female creative, you're identifiable first by your gender, and then you're a creative after that. And I think that, for me, is the interesting switch that needs to happen. Or not switch, sorry, but shift. And instead of people looking at men as just, that is what their role is, and you don't even see them as a man. And then if you're a female leader, it's like, wow, she's a female leader. Yeah. So, well, you're just a leader, actually. And instead, not associating your role with your gender, if that makes sense, and just trying to look at people a little bit more equally.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And it's funny, because even when you said leader, man popped into my head. Whereas obviously female leader pops into my head. So I feel like it's like a thing, a progressive thing over time, that suddenly creatives are just creatives. But until there's like an equality between the, you know, amount or whatever.
You're so right. When I talk about intentionality, I have promoted or hired world-class talent. And they happen to be women. I happen to believe that their style of leadership as humans is what makes them really powerful. That wasn't that I went out looking for female leaders. It's that I love giving them the platform to be brilliant leaders. First and foremost, exactly to Clem's point, they're world-class talent. And so that's why I always come back to the culture that you put those people within, because that's what you want. You want an agency full of brilliant leaders in whatever form they come. But you want those leaders to be imbued with all the brilliant values that we all love about the people we work with. So yes, it's a, as you say, it's changing and shifting a mentality so that your immediate response to leader isn't man in cheap suit on stage. It's, or expensive suit on stage, frankly.
Nylon?
It's much more that it's to do with actually people. I love it when you go leader. And for me, there's two or three people that pop into my mind. And it's actually, they all just have consistency of trait. That's what, when I think great leader, two or three people that I'm like, oh, I don't go to gender. They are, there is difference in gender that are there, but they do all, they are all imbued with a style of leadership that I really subscribe to.
Now, that's really interesting. I think it'd be a really good thought exercise to do leader and what, who first pops into your head.
Yeah. I think there's an interesting point after that as well, which is I think a lot of the time women, and sometimes quite rightly so, are quick to bash men who are doing it incorrectly or wrong or who are harassing people or whatever it is. But actually, building on what Polly said, like, there are so many amazing male leaders that Polly works into and that have inspired her and given her the platform to be where she is today and inspire the rest of us, that actually maybe we need to shine more of a light on the men and women who are doing it right, and actually saying this is the types of behavior that are amazing and that everyone's looking for, and embody some of those characteristics rather than just being hounded the whole time on what not to do.
Yeah, that's just not very inspiring. No, I agree. So obviously we've spoken about the values within your agency. I want to talk about how these are reflected in your client work, and especially the campaign you did for Nurofen on the gender pain gap, See My Pain. So I kind of, if you could talk me through that campaign, like, how did you research women's pain? Did you come across any surprising findings?
Yeah, well, the two things that we should acknowledge up front are that's an amazing client on that. And that's not, I don't mean that in a sort of political sense. I mean that in a very genuine sense. You have to want to be able to shift societal issues, and clients who lean into that, you know, should be celebrated. And the second is it's run by a completely amazing individual called Katie Edwards here at McCann, who again, you know, she lives and breathes and is imbued with the values that she has represented in the sorts of campaign that she's developed with this team. But look, Nurofen, you know, they see their role in society as shining a light on gender inequality with the way that pain relief has been considered over time, and like so many things, it's a sort of it's not even ignored, it's just not been investigated, it's just not been considered, and they've made it their mission to understand that and to unpack it, and to find the correct data sources and sets to make sure that they really understood why and how it's being misused. And like I said, it's not intentional from, you know, certainly not from any healthcare professionals, but it is just, it's a very live issue. So they've invested, you know, £3 million in being able to unpack that and understand how women receive pain differently. But also importantly, misdiagnosis of that has been, you know, it's such a huge impact on people, how they behave, how they feel, how, you know, and especially in different parts of our lives, we talk so much more about, you know, menopause or moments in people's life. That has a disproportionate impact on humans, and their role in that has been a huge one. And the gender pain gap was about identifying and understanding the difference in how men and women receive pain, but also importantly on how that's then acted upon and the sorts of questions that are asked in order to elicit that. And that's what See My Pain is all about, which is some incredibly brave women talking about their experiences and how they, you know, want a better world, but actually that's one where they are, their views are represented, but also that their conditions are acknowledged rather than sweeping generalizations. So for me, you know, I'm so proud of the work that we have done, that team have done, that, you know, that those clients have committed to, because I believe that societal shifts are what you need to get to. And again, I come back to there in some of the small ways. So that campaign is hugely important. It's equally important that, you know, 10,000 pharmacists are being retrained in the way that they talk about pain in pharmacies. You know, there's so many small moments that are the true legacy of the braveness of what, you know, what the gender pain gap started, but what See My Pain and the way that we're going to bring that to life. And we're proud of it, aren't we?
Is it still alive, the campaign?
It is still alive.
It's such a great campaign. And I'd love, I think everyone would love to hear more about the kind of surprising insights you found from that research.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that when you read facts like one in two women feel their pain was ignored or dismissed because of their gender, or, you know, that's half women. That's half of all women have had their pain dismissed. It's like that is a huge statistic. And I think for me, the impact on women's self-confidence is such an important part of this. And I think pain dismissals aren't just destroying women's trust in, you know, I guess in healthcare at large, but also in themselves. And I think women internalize the pain, which then has repercussions on their confidence, which at such important moments in your life has such a disproportionately vast impact on you as a person. So yeah, when I talk about the sort of societal piece, it's not just society at large, it's how that whole human being is able to go through life. So yeah, we take, you know, that all of that alchemy together means you need a big, brave client who wants to be able to take something like that on, and to take on, you know, half the population and make sure that they are leading and having a better experience with pain. And for sure, Nurofen is a committed partner in doing that. And so, yeah, that's when you ask about whether or not our values turn up in our work. I, you know, and at some point I would love Katie Edwards to do this podcast because, you know, she, as I say, she's a real trailblazer for this, and perhaps her and her client could do well.
No, definitely. That'd be really interesting. And I guess it's a huge responsibility, as you say, like one in two women having their pain, feeling their pain is dismissed, is a huge kind of responsibility and amazing thing to take on and tackle. I guess in this room, me and Ava actually, we both have endometriosis. So we've gone through that journey of pain dismissal for like 8 years or something. And had many awkward, not awkward, but annoying and frustrating trips to the doctors. So I think this campaign massively resonated with us. And it just was so nice to see someone, because I remember one of the videos, someone was talking about PCOS and endometriosis. And just to feel like finally it's got a platform and people are recognising it was so powerful.
I think and without going on you, the thing that I think is fascinating about this campaign is that you can look at a statistic like one in two women feel like their pain is dismissed, or that they are misdiagnosed, or that there isn't taken seriously, or that they are told to go on antidepressants, or that they are given another. The thing that is the ultimate test is when you meet people, and the number of people who say to you, I have had a direct experience of feeling like I have had my pain dismissed, I have been misdiagnosed, it has taken me four times longer than it should have done. That's the true test of the power. You know what? I really believe what we do in creative businesses is, you know, it's powerful stuff. If you get it right, it's powerful stuff, and it speaks to people about their own very personal experiences. And so one in two women as a statistic written down is obviously extremely compelling. One in two, if you think about everybody that you meet, so 50% of the room we're in, 50% of this agency of women will have experienced it. That's when it becomes incredibly meaningful. And that's, you know, I really mean it. It's a hugely, I think that what we're doing with Nurofen is going to be one of the biggest and most impactful seismic shifts that people can make in healthcare at the moment, because it's about attitude. So yeah, very proud.
That's great. And I was just going to say, for those who haven't seen the campaign, as you say, it's based on the statistic that one in two women feel their pain was ignored or dismissed because of their gender. And I loved it. It was very clever. The campaign imitated medicine bottles with the replies when women express their pain, like, oh, maybe you're stressed, or maybe it's your age and you're being dramatic. So I feel like a lot of people that will have resonated with them, definitely. And yeah, no, it was just very funny and clever. And I even saw today on the train, I literally took a photo of an advert. It was like the day company, like DAYE. And it was like, they're like the forceps that were used for like gynecological investigations through the ages.
Yep.
But just about like change and progress, which was good. But I wanted to ask, I guess, do you have any kind of new campaigns coming up similar to this, or anything in the works?
So the work we do in Nurofen is ongoing. So that's absolutely, I think that's in its infancy, actually. I think that we've had some great success with where we've started, but again, that's something that is going to need to be continually, you know, nourished, to use that word again. Mm-hmm. It's going to need to be continually supported. So we're really excited that the next phase of that is live and in the agency. And as far as other work that feels like it resonates with the culture that we have here, we're fiercely proud of our Just Eat work.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, and you only need to look at Christina and Lato as two incredible, very baller women that that are up and representing. But no, we hope that it starts to be endemic in all the work that we produce, because we have teams, blended teams, who work on all of our bits of business. And so mm-hmm. it's important that, you know, you'll start to see that flowing through, and whether or not that's in the creative and ideation space, whether that's through our production lens, whether or not that's through our partnerships that we use, all of those things are one big alchemy to just make sure that we're being as representative as we possibly can as a business.
I just wanted to ask, I guess we're kind of coming to the end of this conversation and it's been really great, but I think for a leaving note, what advice would you give young women in the advertising industry today about finding their own voice and their own fearless path?
Shall I go first on that?
Yeah,
and you can. The advice I sort of give to women coming in is, and I was given this advice, that you need to find what's brilliant about you. And that's not an easy thing. Really work out what you're really bloody brilliant at. Like, really genuinely, what makes you fantastic? And then understand that whatever that is going to be your greatest skill. Find a way to amplify that. Find the thing you're really brilliant at and then go all in on it. Because I think too many of us, and I think it's a particularly female thing, we work out all the things that we're not quite good enough at. Mm. And then we just really focus on trying to get better at them. And the reality is, I just like cut your losses and go, well, that's fine. There's going to be some stuff I'm always terrible at. Like, honestly, there's going to be some things that I'm terrible at. But there's also a couple of things that I'm good at. And I wish at a younger age, someone had said to me, just focus on those things. Know what the other things are. Mm. Make sure that you surround yourself with people who allow those brilliant things about you to shine, and make sure that you do the same thing for other people. But don't focus on the things that you're not good at. Focus on the ones that you are. And then, yeah, JFDI, just fucking do it. Like, understand your power. Understand that you will likely, if you can find the thing that you're brilliant at, then double down on it, because it's important.
The thing I was thinking about in response to this question the other day was, I think a lot of the conversation that we have around confidence and stepping into your power and stuff like that, it feels very directed at extroverts. And I think a lot of the time it's quite easy to forget that there are also introverts. And obviously, being an extrovert and being an introvert comes with lots of different positives and things that aren't so positive that you might, you know, think of that way about. But one of the things that I think is transferable potentially across both sets of people, as it were, is finding somebody in your agency. It doesn't even have to be in an agency, it could be at home or in another company or a friend who you can almost buddy up with. I mean, for example, me at McCann, my buddy would be Izzy, who's in my team. And yes, we are professional work colleagues, but we are also more friendly than I would say more than I am with other people in the agency. And it means that before meetings or before podcast recordings like this, whatever it might be, we just have a little natter, chill the vibe. Everybody, you know, you can just relax into it and just step into who you are, which I think, Polly, is one of the things I was saying to you earlier, is like, Polly's an amazing leader for so many reasons, but one of the things that I love the most about Polly is that she's so real. I know that sounds like a bit of a cop-out word to use, but it's almost like I could be at home at a dinner table with you and feel exactly the same as I would be in this environment, for example, and feeling confident and relaxed and comfortable. And obviously I'm very lucky to have that relationship with Polly, but finding, that would be my advice to somebody starting off or someone, a young woman in the industry, is finding that person that you can be relaxed and comfortable around, so that you've almost got a buddy to be in your superpower. Because especially if you are an introvert or more introverted, it can sometimes be a bit daunting to like step into this thing on your own. And actually, if you just have somebody else to hold your hand, you can do it together.
No, that's great advice. So we've got find what you're good at and find your person. which I think are both, yeah,
really. I love that. How reductive. We should have practiced that. That's exactly, we should have, that's perfect. Be on the campaign trail. It's fantastic.
But no, thank you so much. That was really great.
Thank you.
That was IPA on Gender Equality with Polly McMorrow and Clementine Cuthbertson. Thank you.
Thanks.